fresh horrors await New York City as Zora and Mom Johnny manage to create a government-run grocery store.
Okay, he's going to go into a commissary-run grocery store for people on military bases that's run by the Defense Commissary Agency. And I don't think anybody doubts that the government can spend a lot of money to sell groceries at less than they cost to buy. But he says the Defense Commissary Agency is actually making a profit.
And for all the losers and haters, the Defense Commissary's actually taking a revenue of $5 billion while only costing $1.7 billion, which means they generate a $3.3 billion surplus.
Surplus? That would be nice, but unfortunately he's misreading this DECA at a glance page. It does say $5 billion in revenue and only $1.7 billion for operations cost, so if operations were the only cost, I guess he'd be right. Surplus, big surplus. But if you keep scrolling down, you see what net cost of operations means. You take the gross costs, all the costs of running the Defense Commissary Agency, $6.7 billion, minus earned revenue, about $5 billion, to get net cost, $1.7 billion. It costs $1.7 billion to run the Defense Commissary. We can look at other sources to gain confidence that we're reading it correctly. For example, this article from the Congressional Research Service talks about funding for DECA, the Defense Commissary Agency, and they point out that Congress is giving DECA about $1.4, $1.5 billion a year, which matches what we saw on that fact sheet. So no, it's not running at a surplus. They do $5 billion revenue, cost $1.7 billion. For every dollar they sell, they're losing 34 cents.
Grocery store. So fun fact, I was in the military and they have commissaries.
Looks like he's at Bowling Commissary. That's in Washington, D.C. So I'm going to open up the website for a Super Walmart in Washington, D.C.
Let's check some prices. Ground beef, $4.75 a pound. Freedom's Choice Milk, $3.22 a gallon. Eggs, $1.56 a dozen.
Dozen? Six count.
Bread, ignore my fingers, $1.88. We only use King Arthur flour, and look at how cheap this is. $11.99 for an upside-down 24-pack of Dr. Pepper. And
Pepsi. Final item was a sub sandwich, which Walmart doesn't sell, but let's just make one point about eggs. He says it's $1.56 a dozen, but you can clearly see that's for six eggs. The price for a dozen eggs at the commissary is $2.52. You can tell that when he zooms out. So the first Walmart Supercenter in DC that I opened, for six eggs, it's $1.50, slightly cheaper. For a dozen eggs, $2.72, slightly more expensive. I did the same thing for all the other items he mentioned. The commissary price is over here compared to Walmart's price over here. It looks like the commissary does better on ground beef. $4.75 for a pound of 80% lean ground beef compared to $6.93 at Walmart, whereas Walmart does substantially better on the Pepsi. Though maybe that's a temporary deal at Walmart. I do see it's usually $12, now $9.51. Nice. Anyway, it's actually slightly cheaper to buy the items he pointed out, $30.15 at Walmart, than at the commissary, $30.60. So at the beginning of his video, it sounds like he's sarcastically saying, oh no, government-run grocery stores are such a terrible idea. But then he goes on to show you that they're running at a negative 34% profit margin, and they're offering prices that are just slightly worse than what's already available. So yeah, that does seem pretty bad. I'm not saying the Defense Commissary Agency is a bad idea. Soldiers often live places where they don't have access to good American grocery stores. And so we, the public, provide those grocery stores to service members at a subsidized cost, at a loss every year, because that's a benefit we want to extend to service members. That's fine. What I am saying is that it's not profitable to do so, and it doesn't make sense to apply this logic to a place like New York City. It doesn't make sense to say we're going to run grocery stores at a loss in order to provide food at slightly higher prices. It doesn't make sense to me. Thanks for your time.
There you go. I thought that was a brilliant breakdown, just debunking the entire concept of city-run grocery stores. But hey, city runs the subway, doesn't it? That works well. I mean, as long as you don't get lit on fire or anything. But, you know, as long as you don't get lit on fire or drown when it floods, then they work great. I mean, they don't, but maybe we just shouldn't have a city-run anything.
I was hoping you had some of the Alex Jones ones. How is Alex?
He's great. He lost a lot of weight.
I saw he's getting like Yeah, he's ready for the next
My friend Sean Johnson's training him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he gets up every morning. He works out for hours. He's lost, I think he's lost 70 pounds at this point. Hmm. He looks fantastic, man.
Yeah.
He looks fantastic. He looks like he's 20 years younger. People think, this is really funny because, you know, his whole business is conspiracy theories. So it's a conspiracy that Alex has been replaced.
Yeah, yeah.
But listen, folks, that's real Alex. I've watched every step of the way, and my friend trains him. So I can tell you for a fact, that is the real Alex Jones. Quit drinking, quit eating bad food. He's eating healthy food now. He works out every day. It's like no Ozempic, no bullshit, no shortcuts. He did it the right way. He looks great.
You find it all at thealexjonesshow.com, and it funds the most hardcore patriot organization worldwide, absolutely devastating the globalists in our peaceful information war.
Holy shit, he was right about every step of the way.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Call the number to dial is 1-877-789-2539. That's 1-877-789-2539. Give us a call now, and we will take your call. Still some lines open for you. Let's go first to Lori in Washington, who I guess wants to correct me on how to pronounce a pedophile's name. Lori, you're on the air.
Hi, Harrison. First, I want to compliment you on your show. I love it, and I think you're a great role model for men your age and your age group. You're just, you and Chase are terrific.
Thank you.
Now, I wanted you to be the first one to pronounce our favorite convicted pedophile's name correctly. It's Ghislaine. It's not Ghislaine or Ghislaine. There isn't one person in media or at the Justice Department, even pronouncing her name correctly.
All right,
it's just driving me crazy. I had to get it off my chest. What
do you think? Give it to me again. Ghislaine.
Perfect.
Ghislaine. I'm not going to pronounce it like that, Lori. I'm just not going. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. It feels like the. It feels like when the local reporters will go. They went down to El Nicaragua. You know, they pronounce that a lot. I'm gonna keep saying Ghislaine. It's an Americanized version, right? Ghislaine?
No, Ghislaine is a proper French name. I'm a former French Canadian, so Ghislaine is a correct name. But her name is Ghislaine.
Ghislaine. It's actually a nice name.
You did it.
It's actually a very nice name.
All right.
I'm going to call her Ghislaine.
Have a great day.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. We should just come up with a different name for her. We'll just call her Miss Maxwell. We'll call her Robert's daughter. Ghislaine. The French, what are you going to do? Let's go to Eris in Wisconsin. Let's talk about Jew stuff. All right, Eris, you're on the air.
Hi. Just a couple things, and then you can make your comments after. I was wondering how much time is going to go by with the Trump administration, or how bad it's going to get, and if patriots are going to go like on the streets, like with crosses, to like protest like J6 for like the release of Epstein documents.
Mm.
And then like in Israel, I think I didn't really hear anybody talk about it, but it's kind of like a group case study in display for the whole world of the power of manifestation. Jones was kind of highlighting that as well. Like, whereas a people, they've like focused on like Hitler stuff and the Holocaust and all this energy that kind of points to one way. And now they kind of became Nazis. Like, they're literally making concentration camps and like raping people on video. Like, you didn't talk about all those military rapes going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like genocide and kitty killers, you know, like the blood there in Gaza wails from the sands.
Yeah, I mean,
you
it's,
know, and
it,
like what you focus on expands, and like no one also talks about, you brought it up, which is one of the only people I heard ever on the radio, Harrison, you brought not on the radio, on podcasting, about how during
Well, you dropped out there.
Two other.
Hold on. You dropped out there. Sorry. I heard podcast last. Only person on podcast to say what?
I said you were one of the only people on podcast who talked about how Israel during COVID had like stats about how they were the only country that didn't have a decrease in birth rate numbers.
Yeah.
And they had to like correct the numbers because it was like two African countries or something. And then they checked. And then like Netanyahu has a like shot, first COVID vaccine shot in like a glass case in like his office.
Yeah, like a trophy.
And
I saw it was Mel, Village Crazy Lady, yesterday. Somebody was like, does anybody know why Netanyahu has this framed display case with a vaccine needle in it? That's kind of weird. And Mel, Village Crazy Lady, responded with a picture of the golden pager that they gave to Trump.
Yep.
And she said, it's his murder trophy. He's got a lot of them. He's got a lot of murder trophies, actually. They like, creating little trophies about times that they, pulled off intelligence operations to kill millions of people. So, just another trophy. Another trophy of his accomplishments in his office. Yeah, pretty crazy stuff, man.
Yeah, it's like a weird flex, And, like, I think part of it has to do with, like, they got their numbers decimated during the Holocaust and before that. Worldwide about 15 million compared to Russia or India or whatever example you want to use, that like they have to do like worldwide Jewish cock blocking and breeding programs against everyone else. That's why like Americans really can't do anything because they've been hit with the gay bomb and they're all like baggy mincy balls and stuff and they can't do anything. And this stuff just keeps happening, not everybody, of course. Not, I'm not talking about you, Harrison. You're not like
beta,
But, like, I'm worried about it matters because, like, I think a lot of it also is demographics of the Epstein list. That's why it's so spicy. They can't release it. And, like, some of those people on the list might have been drugged in, like, Midnight Climax. Or maybe it's, like, Juliet Bryant, like, shapeshifters. Or, like, the lead singer of Smashing Pumpkins was talking about shapeshifters. People convinced by some, like, shapeshifting pussy or something. And then there's like organ harvesting on top of it. I mean, it just keeps going.
You grab it and it shapeshifts.
Like,
it's crazy. That's a lot of stuff you just dropped on us. It's like kind of it's a common thing. I talked about it yesterday quite a bit where, if you always start the feedback loop at a certain point. And so, you've got, like, I'm thinking of like Haiti, when there was the Haiti revolution against the French, the slaves in Haiti certainly experienced mistreatment, but then once they got power, they just slaughtered everybody. I mean, it was just massacre, and Haiti still has, it's never recovered. It could be a jewel of the Caribbean, but they went insane and killed everybody in retribution, in revenge. It's just, when you are motivated by revenge or motivated by retribution or in this mindset of kill or be killed, you're going to cause more problems than you're going to solve. It's really not all that complicated. And in a way, you see that the real strength of the Jews in history has been their cohesiveness and has been that they...
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Well, yeah, but they constantly feel like they're under threat. They feel like they, are in war. They act like they're, behind enemy lines and, operating this. And again, some Jews are more like it, some aren't. I've always told the story where my Jewish friend who just was never in the Jewish community, or he didn't do birthright or anything, but his mom was Jewish. And he had a bar mitzvah or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it was never like a big thing for him. But he'll tell me stories where, he'll meet another Jewish person. That person's like, "You're a Jew, huh? You're part of the tribe. You and me, we're part of the tribe. We get it. These people are our enemy." And it's like, and my friend's just like, "Okay, dude, yep, part of the tribe. Thanks. Cool. See ya." You don't want anything to do with that. But then, so you got different variations, right? Like any religion or any whatever spiritual paradigm, you're going to have some people that are really extreme and some people that aren't all that into it and some people that don't even know it exists. So I mean, in a way, how are you going to criticize Jews for having, in-group preference when it's worked out so well. Or, you know, that they, like, all the Jews I know, they all got married young and they all have a ton of kids. And it's still very much in the Jewish culture, like, you know, it's the Jewish grandma that's going to be going, when are you getting married? When are you going to have kids? When are you giving me a grandkid? You know, it's that pressure, that constant cultural pressure to have families, to have kids, to get a career. That's why, you know, it's a cliche that all the Jews are lawyers and doctors and dentists and orthodontists and all this stuff. It's because culturally they're driven to do that thing because the whole culture is in this mindset of like, it's not even about you. You owe it to the rest of us. You have to go be a lawyer. You have to go be a doctor because we depend on that, because it's for all of us that you have to go do that. So again, I can't criticize Jews for having that mindset. I wish we had more of it. I wish Christians and white people and other cultures were more like Jews in that regard. We probably wouldn't be in the position that we're in right now. The issue comes when you are that way for your group, but not other groups. So the evil comes in when you know how important it is to, you know, have these cultural institutions, or, you know, maintain your cultural continuity through generations, but then you deliberately go out and try to hamper that for other people. That, I think, you know, is beyond hypocrisy. And you do see a lot of that, where it's like, I don't begrudge Jews for having that strong culture, but then you see people that, you know, deliberately go out to destroy that for other cultures, and it's like, well, that's, why would you not want that for everybody? That's what I don't understand, and that's where you feel like you're being a little bit tricked. Because, like, I want you guys to succeed. I want you guys to thrive. I want you guys to have a solid culture and cohesion in your community. Of course, I want that for me, and I want it for you. But then if you want it for you and don't want it for me, well, now I feel like a sucker, and I feel like you're a bad guy. So it's a touchy situation. What are you going to say? Thank you for the call, Eris. Let's go to Deborah in Boston. Thank you so much for holding it, Deborah. You're on the air about Christian speakers. Go ahead, Deborah. You're on the air.
Hi, Harrison.
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
This is my second time talking to you, actually, and I was it was actually like Christmas Eve, and I was gushing like a major fan, and I feel that way again. You're incredible. You're so brilliant.
Oh, wow.
And I think brilliant people who can express their ideas, they make it look so simple, and it probably just feels like nothing to you. But
I got to be honest, I don't even know what I'm saying half the time. I swear. I was gonna tweet this out yesterday. Every time I get done with the show, I'm like, oh my God, that was terrible. What was I even saying? What was I talking? Why am I even doing that? I'm like, that was a terrible episode. And then I go back and watch it, and I'm like, oh no, I killed it. That was great. That was amazing.
<That's> great. I did a great job. Paycheck for it.
I'm channeling something here. It's not even me, Deborah. I don't even know what's happening half the time.
Well, you know, the things that we're super talented at are really easy for us, and then we can't understand why it's not easy for other people. So
I guess so.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for the compliment. I try to feel that way about myself, but I don't always.
Very important. So, yeah, I've been obviously thinking a lot about religion in general, and I always have. I grew up in, you know, the typical Bible-thumping, evangelical kind of environment, huge, you know, extended family of aunts and uncles and cousins and everybody born-again Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was always a little bit of a troublemaker because I asked questions.
Right.
You know, when I was told everybody else was going to hell but us, you know, like as a little girl, I would be like, what?
Yeah.
You know, and I would get really scared, like, oh my God, like God is terrifying.
Right.
And, you know, it's kind of funny as an adult, when you think back and you remember your childhood memory, you know, thoughts, you know, like I remember hearing Old Testament stories and being like, what the F,
right.
You know, as a friggin' 8-year-old, right? And then constantly being told I was a sinner. And, you know, as I got older and started reading a little bit and getting a little more curious, and I've just been curious, like, what did Christianity look like 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago? You know, 1900 years ago, 18, and it's looked very different.
Right.
And it was really like, you know, the year, whatever, 300 with the Council of Nicaea, and they created a centralized, this is what we believe, or you're getting killed, basically.
Right.
We have a lot of problems with our own religion. And, you know, to try to talk to my religious friends and family, it's like trying to tell a hardcore vaxxer that
right.
believes in pharmaceuticals. I don't know how to break through at all to people. And, you know, I'm kind of at the point of like, well, it's not my job to save the world. But, you know, there's a lot of different, with October 7th, you know, all up until that time, I had been all on board with like, oh, the Middle East, they're just crazy brown people. And, you know, Israel's right. You know, they're good. That's our best ally or whatever. And, you know, and that was the time where I was like, I think it's time to dig into this.
Right.
And, you know, thank God for my best friend. She found some YouTube videos and it was horrifying and shocking and very emotional. And then I started, it started, Stu Peters was actually on, he was interviewed on a show called the Eddie Dean Show, and he's an American who converted to Islam, and he's just like a perfectly normal, reasonable guy. And I started listening to a few other people. There's like an intellectual guy, his podcast and YouTube channel is called Blogging Theology. It'd be really interesting for you or the rest of us to listen to these people and have conversations. There's just a ton of whatever propaganda, like, oh, Muslims just want to kill everybody.
Right.
I think we have a lot more in common with these people. You know, and I think most Americans are just kind of mesmerized by the Fox News images of dirty brown people, you know, walking around with machine guns, and, you know, the women are all covered head to toe. You know, you follow a few different Twitter accounts and you see different people that are like normal people.
Right.
I think we have to question what we've been taught, everything. I mean, think about the guy, Constantine, what year was that? He tells everybody like, oh, I saw a cross in the sky. So therefore we're going to go and convert all of Europe. And if they don't convert, we kill them. Like, is he the good guy? It's terrifying.
Yes. Well, Constantine was the good guy. I'll tell you that right now. That, I mean, you know, that's was sort of an amazing thing. Like, there's no way he should have won that battle, but then he did, and he saw a cross in the sky, so he changed his religion. But his wife, I believe, or his mother was Christian already. I have to defend Constantine. Constantine was pretty amazing, and there's literally a miracle that converted the Roman Empire and changed course history. I mean, your comments about Muslims, I think are exactly right. And there's a lot of propaganda. Of course, there's also very good reason for it. You look at what's going on in Europe. Obviously, Muslims are a gigantic issue and are, you know, not compatible a lot of times and choose not to be. And, you know, the way that our systems have developed, they're just like incapable of dealing with the threat that they pose. At the same time, like, you know, when I was on with the Hodge twins, we were joking about, not even joking, I mean, literally showing videos of parts of Minnesota that look more Islamic and more repressive than Iran. I mean, you go around videos of Iran, you know, some people are wearing veils, some people are wearing like things over their head, but most women are uncovered and it looks almost like a Western country, just with a little sort of Muslim flair to it. And then you see videos like we're showing now in Minnesota, and every single woman is head to toe in a hijab. And every, you know, it looks way more repressive and way more Islamic and way more, you know, culturally different than even Iran does. So, you know, they utilize that wedge whenever they want to. I think at the end of the day, the real thing you got to avoid is the false dichotomy, is the claim that you're either with the Jews or with the Muslims, and you can't be with neither, and you can't be with both. And if you like one, then you must hate the other and want them totally destroyed. And it's just like, that's all insane. That's all insane and stupid. I'm not Christian. I'm not Jewish. but I got no problem with Jews. I'm not Muslim, but I got no problem with Muslims. I don't want either one of them in control of my country. I don't want, and I'm not either one of these religions. Like, this is not difficult. It's not hard. And yeah, there's some crazy Muslims that do crazy things that justify their insane actions on their religion. And there are Christians that do the same, and there are Jews that do the same. And for some reason, it's like we can't acknowledge that without condemning or embracing the whole of the people. And it's like, guys, it's there's variations, there's degrees. I mean, the videos that we're showing are, I admit, utterly terrifying, but, you know, it's just because there's so many of them. My God, we're showing images of the Kaaba and just the sheer mass of humanity. But yeah, so, I mean, was it hard for you to break out of the conditioning that Israel was the good guys? What was it that put you over the top? I know you mentioned some YouTube videos, but was it like something in particular that broke the mold for you, Deborah?
Well, definitely October 7th. You know, I think I've always been accused by my family of being like a bleeding heart liberal. I'm absolutely a right-wing extremist who's always cared about my health and chemicals in the food. And, you know, a lot of Republicans are fat, you know, and they
watch
Fox
News. That's so funny. I so relate to that. It's like, it's the InfoWars thing to be like ultra far right, and then Republicans tell you you're a hippie liberal. It's like,
right.
Okay, dude, I don't know what to tell you.
Right. It's like, I'm sorry. I believe we should care about the environment and our bodies, and our body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. But, you know, I guess I just keep reviewing, you know, some of my childhood thoughts and fears about my own religion. And I just, like, in a childish thought process was like, I think God is nice, and I think he loves us. Really, really, you know?
Right.
And that was wrong. That was, you know, and to this day, you know, I'm following a lot of the people on Twitter that call themselves noticers.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I've kind of got my brother seeing a lot of this stuff. But then when I say, like, okay, so you can see that those people in that country are kind of the bad guys in this situation. So what do you think about the people they're slaughtering? Like, maybe they're innocent.
Right.
And I mean, he just loses his mind. Like, I don't care. I hate them too.
That's so weird. I mean, well, and that's the thing with the fact that Israel is bombing churches now. It's like,
right.
What are they going to say about that? Like, do they still think these people deserve it, even if they're Christians? Like, people genuinely, I don't know how many times I've heard, like, you should go over there, they'll kill your ass. And it's like, what are you talking about? If I go to Israel, they'll spit on me. I don't know what would happen if I went to Palestine, but I don't think they would want to kill me because of all of the Christian communities that have been there for 1,000 years. So why would I be such anathema? Yeah, it's, I don't know, man.
Harrison?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. What were your final thoughts, Deborah?
Yeah, well, what I originally was talking to you know, your call screener guy, I've been watching these videos on YouTube, and they have something in London called Speaker's Corner.
Right.
And it's what Socrates did, and, you know, everybody would go crazy and they killed him. And,
yeah,
like,
it's,
I understand
it's this
now.
Free speech location in London.
Yeah, so they're debating religion, and on the YouTube channel is called Dawa Wise, Dawah Wise. The Muslims are so patient, so kind, so incredibly knowledgeable,
and the Christians aren't. Stay on the line, Deborah. We'll go back to you really quickly, and then out to other calls on the other side. Stay with us, folks.
I need support. We are maxed out, and I can do so much more in offense, guaranteed beat them even faster in court, and got this other stuff going on. I'll leave it that with the Justice Department, the good guys coming in, and the task force on weaponization, that I need funds. So I need you to go to thealexjonesstore.com, subscribe as your monthly donation for $30 a month as a VIP, and know you're doing that bare minimum of support, cancel any time. Not a very hard commitment. You just do it month to month. You charge $30, you're a VIP, and when you want a t-shirt or you want a supplement, you get it, because it'll just build up in your account. $40 to spend in the store. You spend 30, you get 40 automatic discounts on everything, special sales, special offers. I'm asking everyone to commit who's never supported the broadcast by buying anything to become a VIP today at thealexjonesstore.com. And then you know you're doing the monthly support. Ever have an issue, don't want to do it, cancel. One click, it's your profile. But by being a VIP, you get massive discounts, special offers, and so much more at thealexjonesstore.com. And it's a way to show your support. We need your backing. I am 100% dauntless. If anything, I get overheated because I've got so much energy and I'm so angry at these people and it bleeds off into my life. I need your backing. I'm backing you. Quite frankly, if you don't back me and my crew, what we're doing, you're nuts. And I'm not mad at you. I'm just saying you're crazy. Evil hates this transmission. We've got their number. And if you don't back the organizations fighting with everything they've got for you, because we're all in this together, well, you've rolled over. You've run up the white flag, quite frankly. And that's what this is. People ask, man, thanks for fighting. Thanks for never giving up. Wow, why does it break your spirit? It intensifies my spirit. To know we're up against pure evil and we're turning the tide and we're winning. And then to know that if we don't fight hard, they're going to win and commit humanity to a nightmare of evil. You think stuff's bad now? You ain't seen nothing yet. Thank me for fighting for my own future and yours collectively? There's not even a question of fighting these people. Look at them. They've got to be opposed. People tend to think being persecuted is, oh, you want to stay away from that? Oh, so you want to stay away from the fight? No, it's like John Paul Jones, somebody got commissioned as the head of the U.S. Navy, and Robert was starting, and he was writing to the Continental Congress. He said, I only want the fastest ships. I only want to be sent into the main war zones in direct action. They said, here, it's our fastest ship. Go out. He immediately goes out and engages and takes over all these British ships, 2-3 times the size, just ramming straight into them. Well, that's what I want to do. I only want the fastest ships. I want to go directly into action. I want to go 24 hours a day. I want reporters all over the country. I want to be 50 times stronger against the enemy. I want 50 times the audience. I want victory. You think what we've done to the enemy's been effective so far? It's nothing. I have not yet begun to fight. So support yourself. Support us. Do it. Or be conscious that you didn't fight when the time was right. You hesitated. You took this as another entertainment venue, to some other show, just more talk. This ain't talk. This is the targeting coordinates to take down the enemy. This is the Death Star plans. This is Sting, the Goblin Slayer. They hate this blade. This operation is a sword that is plunged politically, culturally, spiritually into the hearts of our enemies over and over and over again. They hate it. It's a standard of their defeat. It's a symbol of their weakness. That's what we're doing here. This is serious business. So I'm coming to you, asking you to continue to commission us in this fight. We've already delivered you more victories against the enemy than any other media operation in the world. And I'm asking you again for all of our collective futures to come to our aid now more and take your fight to the 110% level. Tell the truth. Be accurate. Stand against evil. Have courage. Until it's not even having courage, it's what you are.
Putting the power of conversation into the caller's hands, you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. We're talking to Deborah from Boston. I wanted to hold you over just to let you say this final point about Speaker's Corner. I think what you're pointing to is actually very important and something that we don't take seriously enough. Deborah, final thoughts before we move on to some other people?
Dawa Wise also has a Twitter account, which I didn't realize. They're incredibly brilliant intellectuals, kind. The Christians that show up to argue with them, they're not just normies that just fell off a bus. They show up to do this. There's many preachers, and it's embarrassing, and you get like a real bad case of Schadenfreude. It makes me laugh, and it's really embarrassing.
That's interesting. I've seen a lot of videos of Christians sort of destroying people at the Speaker's Corner.
Really?
Arguing with Muslims and sort of winning. I mean, that's the only videos that I see, but I don't watch a lot of them, and you're probably watching the ones that are posted by the Muslims that aren't going to post when they lose. They post when they win, right?
Yeah, I'll link you, or I'll tag you in one of these. This guy is so intellectual, and he's so kind, and I think you would love him, actually. The main points that they focus on is the Trinity, the concept of the Trinity, and it's not really in the Bible. And one of the main verses has actually changed over the centuries. And it's not natural, really, when you start asking Christians to define what the Trinity is. Mm. That's one of the things they talk about a lot. And then they use the Bible. They're showing where Jesus said God the Father. You know, he's really just encouraging everybody to follow God the Father and kind of making a distinction, really, between himself or, you know, God the Father and the God of the Old Testament. How many times did he say, you've heard it said, but I say unto you? You know, you've been told, but now I'm saying to you. He's making a distinction.
Well,
If you've had a conversation with one of these guys, it would just be just brilliant.
Well, I'd love to have a conversation with him. The thing is that Christianity has, to a large extent, like, rested on its laurels and not, like, honed its edge because it's been so successful in Europe and around the world. People don't really know how to even justify it, even though, you know, all these arguments have been made for literally hundreds of years. I mean, the whole thing about the Trinity, I mean, you want to go back to Constantine and the Council of Nicaea. That's what it was all about. So, I mean, these arguments have been had for literally 1,000 years. I don't think the Muslims at Speaker Corner are going to come up with any new arguments. Just the Christians that they're dealing with haven't, I guess, educated themselves on these topics. But the thing I think to understand is that Muslims are very, very smart about their evangelicalism. They're very dedicated to their evangelicalism. And this isn't, or their, I don't even know if that's the right word, but their attempt to get more people into their religion. I was talking to Jake Shields about this years ago, like back when I first met him at a TPUSA event. And I think it was in 2022 or around that time. And he was saying, yeah, you know, this is when he like kind of first started getting political, right? He was a fighter. He had, you know, people knew who he was because of his fighting, and he sort of was dipping his toe in the cultural stuff and sort of talking about politics a little bit, but he wasn't, you know, who he is now. And he was like, man, the Muslims are so intense. And because it's like, you know, it's billionaires from Qatar that are running these programs where like, and because I was having this conversation with Jake Shields, and he's like, yeah, all the Christians I talk to are like, they're just very like judgmental and just want to sort of criticize you and tell you how you're doing things wrong. He's like, the Muslim people, they're trying to give me cars. They're trying to fly me places. They're like, they aren't pressuring me a lot. They're just like, I always want to show you what it's like. Like, just come out, you know, come to our country and see how we live. And so like, this is a real issue that we're having right now, is that the Muslims are very careful with how they are pushing their beliefs. And they know, hey, we can't be too mean or judgmental. We have to be nice. We have to be friendly. We have to be ingratiating and insinuating in order to get these people over on our side. So there's a spirit in Islam of expansion, and that happens militarily when they're in charge. But when they're not in charge, it happens rhetorically. It happens, you know, with seduction and convincing you to come over to their side. Way more so than Christians are, even though we have the evangelical bent, even though we have, you know, missionaries and things like that, it is not anything like the organized and coordinated actions of Islam. And so, you know, if you've got somebody out there that's not a Christian or not a strong Christian and is seeing everything going on, and, you know, he's approached by the Christians who are just like, shut up, you're Israel's best, you know, Israel is our best friend and you're going to hell and the end. And then there's a Muslim guy like, hey, man, yeah, I think you're going to like our style. And we're, you know, we're pretty laid back. And, you know, why don't I give you some gifts and take you on vacation and hang out with you? Like, it's going to work on some people. The thing is, when you really get into it, when you really look into it, Islam is kind of nonsense. It's actually very much nonsense. I wish I could remember the name of the Christian apologetics guy on I'll have to get you his name, because he goes through and just debunks all of these arguments that the best, you know, Islamic scholars make, they're just not true. You know, the Muslims have a, it's called taqiyya. They're allowed to lie to you in order to achieve their goals. Like, it's not a sin in their religion to lie to a non-Muslim if it perpetuates the growth of Islam. So they will just lie about what their religion entails. It's actually part of their religion. And their religion is half spiritual, but it's half just political. And it's about, you know, how you organize politically and where power comes from and that sort of stuff. So you can, you know, intellectualize about it. I need to show the clips. I need to find the clips where if you watch an Orthodox priest argue against Islam, it's like, it's actually funny how easily they defeat all of Islam. Because they'll do things, they'll be like, who does it say is going to judge the world at the end of time in judgment? And the Muslim person will be like, it says Jesus Christ. The guy goes, okay. And who does the Quran say is able to judge the living and the dead? And they're like, God alone can judge the living and the dead. Okay, so Jesus is God. Okay, so Jesus is going to judge everybody, and the only person who can judge everybody is God, but you don't think Jesus is God? There's an incompatibility there, isn't there? And they say, Jesus told the truth, and everything Jesus said was the truth. Well, Jesus said he was the Son of God. He said, I am the I am, or whatever that phrase is, right? The beginning and the end, the Alpha and the Omega. Jesus didn't make the claim, I'm a good teacher, right? This wouldn't be an issue if Jesus just made the claim, I am a rabbi, I am a good teacher, and I have good advice. That we wouldn't have an issue. He said, I am God. He said, I am the Son of God. He said, I am the Messiah. I am the one who was promised. So you don't really have that option. C.S. Lewis has a great quote about that, where it's like, Jesus didn't give us the option. Either he's an insane person who thought he was God and was wrong, or he's the real deal. But there's no middle ground. There's no, he was a good teacher, he was a prophet. That is actually incompatible with what he actually said. Either he's talking crazy and he's completely wrong about who he is and you shouldn't listen to him, or he's right, which he obviously is, because it's 2025 years later and we still mark our calendars by his birth. So I think he was onto something there. So don't get seduced by the rhetoric of the Islamist. Go out and find videos they don't publish. Find videos published about or of them that they didn't want out there. And I think you'll see their arguments aren't quite as sophisticated as they might come across. However, I think you're right about the style of Christian argumentation and apologetics at this point is not nearly as effective as the methods that the Islamists deploy. But thank you very much for the call, Deborah. I really do appreciate that. Let's go to Stephen in Alaska now. Let's talk about Cash Patel in Israel on line 5. Go ahead, Stephen. You're on the air.
So I've seen this little deal on Cash Patel's girlfriend being a dual Israeli citizen. So I've been doing some digging, and it seems that there's some serious truth to this, right? So if you know anything about the Zionist control and you understand really how deep it goes, it starts to make more and more sense about why they're covering up the whole Jeffrey Epstein list. Because let's face it, this isn't about a pedophile. This is about the children and the victims and ensuring that the people who did these horrible things to these kids are prosecuted for the criminals that they are, and that they cannot be in our society in positions where they're making policy decisions, decisions about what we see on the television. Why are we letting these pedophiles basically control our society? They need to be removed.
Yeah, I agree. And I talked a little bit about Cash Patel's girlfriend, although I think fiance now, if I'm not mistaken, I think they're engaged to be married. Pointing out that she works at PragerU, which is run by, I think her name is Melissa Strait or something like that. But
yes, sir.
Yeah, the person who runs PragerU is Unit 8200. She's IDF. She's literally a Israeli spook. So you have Cash Patel's longtime girlfriend slash fiance, literally under direct command of a Mossad operative, of a Mossad agent, of a commander of the Israeli army. So, yeah, a little bit concerning. And I actually have another video here, clip number 7. This is former FBI agent Kyle Serafin with some pretty interesting information about Kash Patel and his living situation. And some of these are rumors and unconfirmed, but I think it ties into what Stephen is saying. Let's watch clip number 7 now.
I have the photos here. This is the house. This is the house here in Vegas. So we'll put these up on the screen here. So from your sources at the FBI, Cash is basically living in this house. We don't know if he's living there with this billionaire donor, Michael Muldoon, in the house together, which is strange. And where is Cash's girlfriend in all of this? Does she live there at the house as well?
Everything I can tell, she lives in Nashville, so not there. Now, maybe they've relocated and decided to cohabitate, but maybe not. You know, there's been a lot of questions about the age differential between Kash Patel and the girlfriend. A lot of sort of like Israeli intel speculation. I think those are speculative. I can't substantiate any of it, and I don't think they can either.
That she's like a honeypot or something?
Correct. But the other question that I've had people bring up, including people that are homosexual FBI employees that are pro-Trump, which is not a big subset of the world. Let's just be real. Like, there's not a ton of that. Just if you were to put those categories together, have indicated to me that they don't really know a lot of 50 or 40 something year old Indian men that are unmarried and living with other men that don't have something going on. So there's you know, kind of a rumor in intel kind of passing around through the FBI, folks that have come through whistleblower channels, folks that I know personally that have kind of intimated that like this may be more than just, you know, two men living together, which, by the way, in their 40s and 50s is a pretty strange circumstance. I don't know any of my friends that are doing that. Maybe one friend of mine that does, that's kind of like, you know, kind of living in an alternative sort of scenario, but it's not sort of the transparent sort of look. And then the last thing we've been hearing is that the protective detail is having to wake up Kash Patel on a regular basis because he's out partying all night in Washington, D.C., maybe in Las Vegas as well. And then we heard exactly the opposite said by Dan Bongino when he went out on a Fox interview saying, you know, he's there at 6 a.m. and he's working until, you know, from 6 to 7 p.m. and he's there all day long. And everything I hear is the exact opposite of that. So now you've got Dan Bongino apparently like maybe running cover and acting like he's working when he's not. And at the end of the day, all of this does, especially in the light of this Epstein situation, it's making Donald Trump look terrible. It's giving him people that seem.
So again, you know, some of that is rumor or innuendo, but certainly it is true that Kash Patel lives at this guy's house, Michael Muldoon. And it kind of became a story because Kash Patel wanted to work from home half the time. And his home is in Las Vegas at this guy's house. And there's a lot of these figures that, because they're not public, even if they're billionaires and super influential and, you know, not to turn a phrase, but in bed with all these high profile politicians, you'd think there'd be a lot of like information about them publicly, but there's just not. So it's hard to even figure out who this guy is. Kash Patel wants to work from home for the FBI. Who does he live with? Story from Yahoo News. Kash Patel's appointment as FBI director seems to be coming with conditions. He wants to live part-time in Vegas and work remotely. He lives at a home owned by Michael Muldoon, a Republican Party mega donor who runs shady timeshare companies. And so you search this guy, and I don't know if this is the same guy. This is the problem. So I search Mike Muldoon, and the first thing that comes up is the Rockefeller Foundation. Mike Muldoon, Chief of Staff, President's Office, the Rockefeller Foundation. I can't tell if this is the same guy, though. Maybe the crew can do some due diligence. But this guy, Mike Muldoon, served as the Chief of Staff and joined the Rockefeller Foundation in 2017 as Managing Director of Innovative Finance. He brought a unique perspective. He was the director at Latitude Capital, a private equity firm focused on utility scale power in emerging markets. At Latitude, Mike supported all elements of the firm's business. And then he was a senior investment officer at the United States Agency for International Development, USAID, loan guarantee program, the Development for Credit Authority, where he was responsible for developing loan guarantees to facilitate loan lending for local businesses and infrastructure, primarily in Africa. Is this the same guy? I don't know. I can't tell. Honestly, I have no idea. Michael J. Muldoon, there's like no pictures of this guy. So I don't even know what he looks like. So I don't know if it's the same person or not. It doesn't say anything about timeshares or whatever. And that's what this guy apparently was known for, timeshare empire. The images features Patel called a colleague and Muldoon identified as a client. The Equient executive who attended the outing and shared the image on LinkedIn did not respond to phone calls or emails. And they're trying to figure out like who this guy even is. But yeah, I think that's a little bit odd and suspicious. And again, I can't tell, but is this the same guy? I don't know. Maybe the callers can tell me. Is the Mike Muldoon that Cash Patel is living with the same Mike Muldoon that's a chief of staff at the Rockefeller Foundation and used to work for USAID? And if so, that's a little bit odd. So some strange connections brewing up there as people look into why Cash Patel is has changed his tune so much when it comes to Epstein. Let's go to Roy in North Dakota now on line one, talking about releasing the Epstein list. Go ahead, Roy, you're on the air.
What's up, dude? Hey, just going back a little bit, you know, and I'll get back on track here to Deborah. it's kind of like the van, you know, the guy in the van. Hey, come on in here, kids. I got some candy for you.
Right.
And,
right. They don't say, you know, come on in, I have handcuffs and a gag. Right. They present you with the candy because that's what they have to present you with to get you in the van. Yeah, exactly.
And all respect for Deborah, too. I mean, the Muslim religion is they're professionals at it.
That is true.
Capturing minds and manipulating people that are all right, you know, lost.
Hey, Roy, you were kind of cutting in and out there, so go ahead and make your point about the Epstein list, please, before we lose you. I don't want to have you drop. Yeah,
let me get up here to the top of the hill.
I'll tell you what, stay on the line there, Roy. We'll come back to you in just 1 minute. We'll go to Kenny in Brooklyn first, because we're all on the same topic here. Kenny in Brooklyn, go ahead. You want to talk about the Epstein info?
Yeah, Trump does not want us to talk about the Epstein list because either A, is a hostage situation going on between the secret occults that run our government and our secret intelligence, and we know who they are, but I think that it's basically a hostage situation between him and the deep state, and deep state meaning Freemasons, Kabbalists, Kiwanis, Rotary Club, other branches of the secret government that runs other governments around the world, including ours. That's a rift going on. And also, he's counting on the American public to ask questions because he does everything constitutionally. So constitutionally, he needs the people to support every move that he makes. He knows a lot of people won't support. Basically, his whole base won't support the fact that he's pushing up against Jeffrey Epstein, the list not releasing. And I feel like he just wants the American public to talk about why JFK was shot. He probably wants people to talk about how the country was founded and where did we lose sight of what we actually created from the ground up.
Mm.
And I think intellectually he wants people to be more sharp and in tune with their inner instincts instead of like getting all caught up with the AI. Yes, there's a lot of money behind AI.
Maybe so. I think probably he's just frustrated that he, you know, just got through this big bill and he just passed this rescission thing where now the crew just brought in a article and I got a little bit confused. So what does this mean? Is that the same guy? It's not the same guy. It's a different guy. Okay, so there's two Michael Muldoons, both of which we're suspicious of. Okay, so it's not the same guy as the Rockefeller Foundation person. Thank you for bringing that in. I imagine he's, you know, Trump is, just looking at it at face value, it makes sense that he is achieving all this stuff and is pissed off that people are talking about Jeffrey Epstein when he thinks they should be celebrating his victories, because he is having victories. I mean, he's, you know, the deportations are up. Stephen Miller just said that 1 million people have self-deported. You've got PepsiCo is rebranding Lay's, Tostitos, and removing artificial dyes. Like, that's a major victory, which, you know, we're in an existential situation, so it makes sense why we're not celebrating these little victories as much as we would otherwise. But, like, we should be celebrating these. We should be, you know, pointing out that, like, what we've been fighting for decades is finally coming to fruition. And, like, they're removing the artificial dyes, and they're removing the plastics. They're removing the estrogen mimickers. They're removing the fluoride from the water. Those are major victories we should be celebrating. But I think the victories that Trump is having, he's probably just pissed off that people are talking about Epstein when he thinks that we should be celebrating what he's achieving. Here's another one. White House celebrates end of child sex change programs at hospitals across the country. With everything with Epstein, nobody's even mentioning this. This is total victory. This is complete victory. This is sanity rising to the surface after being drowned by madness for the last decade of transgenderism. Hospitals can no longer perform mutilation surgeries on children. And we don't even notice. We haven't even talked about this. We should be popping champagne with the incredible victories that we're having. So I too don't want to get too far off the mark with Epstein, but we're trying to cure the cancer that our country has, and we need the chemotherapy necessary. As painful as it will be, we have to cure the real underlying cause. So these victories are amazing, but it's still worth it to focus on Epstein. Roy, we got about a minute left. Sorry, we had trouble with your connection. If you can hear me now, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry about that, dude. So, yeah, I mean, here's the deal, dude. Trump, he's a deal maker, and he's always been upfront about it. He's been on the same basic talking points, you know, since the 80s. And he's pretty consistent that he likes to make deals, and he's a professional deal maker. And, you know, he has been pretty consistent. He wants to make America great. He wants to see certain policies in place to help the economy, and all the winning that you just mentioned is happening. All these things he wanted to get done.
And you're basically saying that Epstein files don't help him achieve that. So he's just not interested. He's results-oriented.
Yeah, and you know what? The Epstein list is part of this big global, you know, power structure that's been there for 1,000-plus years. And, you know, is Trump going to take on that whole power structure and piss off everybody in the world and go on and have some huge, giant war with everybody?
Hey, look, I have sympathy for Trump. The only reason I think it's a little bit different is because this is a mess entirely of his making, and there's been no adequate explanation as to why we can't have the things released. Look, if Trump was using Epstein, if he was going, hey, you know, if he was telling the people behind the scenes, I get what I want or else the Epstein list gets released, and he was using it, you know, as leverage, that'd be awesome. I don't think that's what's happening. I hope it is. Stay with us, folks. 90 Seconds, the Alex Jones Show. Don't go anywhere.
Fox News alert, the Ayatollah's gone into hiding. He's believed to be holed up inside an underground bunker northeast of the Capitol. Iranian proxies, which have been severely degraded, are threatening to commit acts of terror against American troops and American ships in the region.
And sources are telling ABC News that President Trump has approved the attack plans for Iran that were presented to him.
And American businesses are now bracing for cyber attacks. The whole world's watching.
In light of that news, I have a message directly from the president, and I quote, "Based on the fact that there's a substantial chance of negotiations that may or may not take place with Iran in the near future, I will make my decision whether or not to go within the next 2 weeks." That's a quote directly from the president for all of you today.
What's your take on that? Because people say, well, that's just the press secretary. No, that's Trump talking. Now it looks like he's given himself more breathing room, 2 weeks, when we were coming down to the deadline. And the last deadline passed, obviously, and within 24 hours, Israel struck.
What Trump is saying, I believe, in that message is, I don't want to embroil America in a war for the next decade plus.
And that's what he's been saying in the last 48 hours, or really 24, is, I only want to do this if it doesn't turn into a long war. Now he's learning it will. And so sanity is prevailing. Wow, that's so important. People need to call and get a free consultation or go sign on the email. You guys are the best. You have the best prices selling it at wholesale. That's why you're top rated. Most other places are a scam. It's just true. Gold and silver is great, but not the way people sell numismatics and collectibles. It's a scam, folks. It goes from bad to worse. You're the place to go to. You can also roll over financial instruments. It's so easy, but people need to go to kepm.com/gold, 720-605-3900. And folks really need to take action. and now the best investment there is. All I'm going to do is steer you right, folks, because I treat you like I want to be treated on the supplements, on the products, on the sponsors, only the best. And that's Kirk Elliott Precious Metals, KPM.com/gold, 720-605-3900. Call now for your free consultation.